You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Welcome to the Essential Apple Podcast, where we talk about Apple and all the Apple-related news and anything else that catches our eye. Hello and welcome to this edition of The Essential Apple, where Nick and I come to you from a very wet and unpleasant Sunday. There you are. It's very, very nasty, which is a bit weird because yesterday was lovely. There you go. Yesterday the sun was shining and it was positively spring-like, and today it isn't. There you go.
Yeah, typically British, really.
Very, 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 very British. Very, very British indeed. And so there you go. Lots of stuff's been going on this week. I've been at my Mac. And I've been making some new intros and outros because the old outros were very out of date. So I've made a couple, you know, playing around with Audacity and some bits of music and so on. And as I was telling Nick before we started the show, we've both been playing around a bit with AI images. We have indeed. And Nick has done some couple of amusing images of himself. There's one where, I don't know, what's it? What did you tell that one? Do me as Dick Turpin or something, is it?
No, this wasn't text to AI. This is a program called Remini.
Okay.
On the iPad, and you can do text to images, but this one you actually selected like the style that you wanted. So they'd got a style with, you know, a horse on.
Oh, okay.
and someone riding a horse, and someone stood next to a horse, and that kind of thing. And then you just supplied it with six, seven selfies of yourself. And then it created these images from it by inserting your faces into the images, effectively.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it's a slightly different take on
Is that the one I've heard about where it does basically editing by text? So you can put in a picture of your own and say, take out the blue cars or whatever. Is that the one?
Oh, I don't know. No, I don't think so.
All right. There's one that people have been talking about that does that, which is effectively AI photo editing.
So that is clever. No, this isn't quite that sophisticated. The other ones that I've shared was basically a picture of me. I'm trying to think where that was. That's somewhere reasonably local to the Midlands. It's actually a priory with me sitting against a wall. And then I've chosen the sort of cartoon style of it. And it's created a not bad cartoony sort of image of me. And what's quite interesting is that the background, it's enhanced. So the real background is there isn't an awful lot of the priory left, whereas the edited version has actually added some a fireplace and an upstairs window that isn't in the original photograph at all.
Yeah, that's quite fun. I noticed that. Yeah,
it's still amazing what you can do with very little effort, really.
Yeah.
Because I'm not in the slightest bit artistic, but. let the program get on with it, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, I've never done any sort of this generative AI thing, but as I was explaining to Nick, there's been a bit of a thing on Twitter, certainly over this week, and I don't know what started it. I suspect some, you know, hardcore right wingers made some patriotic images with AI and totally over the top. You know that thing, those people who paint those pictures of Donald Trump where he's surrounded by all the previous presidents who are all basically worshipping him, or, you know.
Yeah, they're sort of satirical, aren't they? Satirical.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm assuming that's what started it. But anyway, the result is that Twitter has been filled with these rather over-the-top satirical takes on the same thing. They're all generated with AI, so I thought I'd have a go. So maybe I'll put a link to them somewhere and people can have a look. But anyway, I basically said things, typed in things like Knights Templar with British flags defend the UK Houses of Parliament from ravening zombies while Spitfires fly overhead, and generated some images from that, variations on that, which were, you know, they all seem to come out like faux old master type paintings. I don't know why that should be. But then in the spirit of lampooning this sort of extreme patriotism-led silliness, I did some which are fat crusaders with beer and pies supported by lions, you know, defend the Houses of Parliament from starving dogs and such like. And I've got some rather amusing images. I think I might choose one of those as the show.
Yeah, that sounds a good idea. Why not?
There's two here I really quite like of the silly ones. There's a fat crusader who's got the St. George cross painted on his belly, but not actually wearing a shirt. He's got armour on arms and things. And the other one was the one that Nick spotted, which is also amusing, which is there's one where it's interpreted it where it's actually the lion who's got the pies and the beer. quite funny. But there you go.
So supported by the lions by eating all the pies, but it looks like.
Supported by lions with pies and beer. Anyway, all that as it might be, that was just some silliness. And if you look me up on Twitter, I think I posted them there. If you're in the Slack room, I've put them in the Slack room. And maybe I'll put them somewhere that other people can have a look if they like. But there we go. All good fun. Silliness abounds. And I did most of those with Bing, by the way, because I that was the easiest one to find.
I was using a program called ReMini,
yes,
which is available for download. It's a subscription thing, but you can get 6 free days and you can cancel it immediately, which is what I did. So I just downloaded the program and then went into it, cancelled the resubscription in the in settings on the iPhone.
Because and
then just played with it for a few days.
And I don't know what it is, because I've just earlier on today I was listening to Guy and Gaz on my Mac, and Guy and Carl had got into some silliness where they were basically generating ludicrous images with ChatGPT or something. They ended up with cartoony images of I think they were again like refining it and playing about with it. And there was one where apparently there was a guy in an Epic t-shirt versus a guy in a Apple t-shirt, and then they made some mods to it and redid it. And then Gaz said, I don't know why, but all of a sudden they've both morphed into Craig Federighi and so on. So yeah, if you want to listen to that, they describe it, and maybe Guy will post them somewhere. But that was just pure coincidence. It seems to have been a week for everybody to start playing about making silly images with AI. So there you go. So we'll move on to some news, shall we? Let's get on to some real news. And
why not
the big story, of the week, and I'm not going to spend ages on this because lots of people talk about it, is Apple and Epic got into another spat. They got themselves into a spat because Apple said to Epic that they could have a European developer account. Apple, of course, having banned Epic Games from having a developer account after they broke the rules in the App Store and kicked off this whole regulatory and legal fight. And so Apple basically said, yes, you can have an Epic Sweden developer account so that you can set up an Epic Games alternative app marketplace, as they would like to refer to them. Anyway, after this happened, apparently Tim Sweeney and Phil Schiller got into an email exchange, and after a while, apparently, you know, Tim Sweeney or Epic posted some of this correspondence, I don't know, on Twitter or somewhere or on their blog, And basically, it had devolved into a schoolboy argument between, where Apple or Phil Schiller appeared to be saying, we don't like you and we don't trust you and you're being mean to us and calling us names. So we're going to take our ball and go home. And Apple then had said to Epic, you've broken the rules in the past. How do we know you're not going to break the rules again? We want some assurances. So Epic sent back a curt one-paragraph response, which basically was like, we promise not to do it again and we'll be good, trust us. To which Apple responded with a lawyer's letter saying, you have proven to be irredeemably and verifiably untrustworthy and we're going to take away your Sweden account and you can't have it anymore, Yahoo sucks. Which was all getting very, childish on both sides, to be honest. So Epic then put all that all over their blog or on Twitter or whatever and called Apple nasty names yet again. And I suspect they went running to the EU. Apparently, Bart earlier said that obviously that didn't go down well because Apple had said, because an American court told us that we have the right to... discontinue anybody's App Store privileges if we like. So that's what we're doing. And as Bart said, if you want to do that and effectively tell the EU that because an American court said something, they've got to go along with it, you might as well rub your cat the wrong way. And I suspect, I don't really know because I haven't bothered to dig into it that much. It's all a bit tedious. I suspect Apple went crying to the EU, and EU, I suspect, contacted Apple and said, are you really trying to upset us and get fined? The rules haven't even been in effect for a week yet, and you're basically doing your absolute best to annoy everybody and behave like children. So, stop it. So Apple eventually have relented and have reinstated the Epic Sweden developer account so that they can, in fact, make a marketplace of their own. And that's really all I want to say about that, other than, to be honest, as everybody else has pointed out, it's very unusual to see Apple behaving, at least in public, so unprofessionally, and they really have made themselves look very silly indeed. And the whole thing is unseemly, and both sides just show how childish and apparently, somewhere behind the scenes, I think it shows that both sides have got very wound up about this and are taking it very personally. And it's devolved into a schoolboy, slanging match.
Yeah, it just shows what happens when you get two very powerful companies who have both got lots of money.
And
then they get a sort of this sort of superiority complex that they're better than everybody else, and or they deserve more than everybody else.
Yep. And there you go. Yeah. It's all very unseemly. And if you want to read about it, go away or listen to The Verge. The Verge cast had a big piece about it. Bart mentioned it in his latest one, which technically is the February news. And even though this spilled over into the start of March, I think he couldn't really leave it.
The only thing that annoys me about it more than anything else is this now does show or indicates that Apple has been just being obstructive. And I'm not convinced they have been, but that's certainly the impression they've given now.
Well, they've certainly...
They're just being awkward.
Yes.
And for the sake of it.
The whole thing just makes everybody involved look silly. And
whereas, lots of podcasters, like us, I expect, have been standing up for Apple and saying, they're doing the right thing. They're protecting our security and they're doing... And now we're all not so quite so sure that's their only motive.
Certainly not when it comes to Epic,
No.
It really was a bit, you're smelly and we don't like you. So. And you called us horrible names, so we're going to throw mud at you. There we go. That's enough of that. That's the whole thing. If you're interested in finding out, everybody's been talking about it. It's all over the tech blogs and, podcasters who care to research this thing and talk about it at great length. Vergecast had one. I'm probably sure Gruber will come up with something to do with it later. But that's enough of that. It's all just silly and unseemly. There we are. So we'll move on to something a bit less unpleasant. We'll have some
Yes, let's do that.
We'll have some more stuff about the DMA again later, because Apple have made some other changes to the rules, probably because the EU have leaned on them behind the scenes, but we'll talk about those a bit later. Apparently, so let's move on. Tom's Guide says the M3 MacBook has this one major update that Apple didn't advertise. And this is basically that... No, go away. I don't want your stupid cookies. M3 MacBook Air has this one major upgrade Apple didn't advertise. The base model now has significantly faster SSD performance than the M2 predecessor. And this all stems from, again, when the M2 launched, if you bought 256 SSD, it only had a single NAND chip in it, unlike the M1, which had two 128 NAND chips in it for the base configuration. And technically, this makes it a lot slower. If you only have one chip, it only has half the bandwidth, two chips, and so on. So technically, if you bought the M2 with 256 SSD, you were taking a performance hit on read-write to your SSD. To be honest, I don't think many people would really notice, and the sort of people who buy 256 SSDs really probably don't care, but there you go. Lots of bloggers and people got all bent out of shape about it, and... it was shocking. Yeah, and
those, that fraction of a second it takes to save your document.
Yeah, exactly.
Is now at least 10% faster.
Yeah. But anyway, apparently, with the M3 MacBook Air, we're back up to full speed. YouTube channel Max Tech performed a teardown of a new laptop and revealed that once again, the M3 MacBook Air contains two 128GB NAND chips, which means they can perform at the same time, leading to a faster data transfer. So, blah, blah, blah.
I suppose if you're editing lots of videos and things, then that matters because you've got quite large files. But for the rest of us, it really doesn't make any difference.
But
at
then
all.
If you're doing that, you're not going to buy a 256.
No, that's probably true.
You're going to splash your cash on a lot bigger SSD. So there you go. I just found that. I guess it's interesting. There could be any number of reasons for that. It could be Apple deciding that people, you know, got grumpy and cranky, as Bart would say, about this slightly.
Could be, or it could simply be that they got a bigger supply of those chips.
It could be anything.
They just decided to put them in.
It could be that, Who knows? Maybe they couldn't get hold of any 128s at the time. Who knows? I don't know.
It's nice that they're giving more performance for, you know, and not crowing about it. That's excellent. Yep. So, more is always better than less, of course.
Yep, indeed.
Do you remember the big hoo-has that used to be over the speed of the spinning hard drives years ago?
Oh, yes. Indeed.
You know, they'd say, oh, they've launched a new one, but it's still only got I can't remember what speed they used to speed them. Was it RPM?
RPMs.
It's only a 50 RPM instead of a 100 RPM.
The big thing was, you know, is it 7,500 RPM or is it 10,000 RPM? Yeah. And to be honest, it's like, really? Really? I mean, again, yes. In those...
Well, particularly with the M chips, I mean, they're just so fast anyway. That, I say, unless you're doing something fairly fairly hefty with your machine, you're just not going to notice it.
You're not going
to. But it's, as I say, it's always good to have more than less. So.
Oh, of course it is.
Well done, Apple.
Well done, yes. For whatever, anyway. And following on from that, Tech Radar say Apple has confirmed the MacBook Air M3 will not be a fingerprint magnet like the Air M2. The main thing there was particularly the midnight colour, which lots of people say is very dark blue. To be honest, mine always seems black to me. Maybe it's got a tinge of blue in it, but there you are. And as I said to Nick before the show, I put mine in a Massimo thin rigid clamshell in matte black, which really is a fingerprint magnet, by the way. It's a sort of semi-soft touch surface, and it really is a fingerprint magnet, but it's not my Mac, and I can just rub it with a damp cloth, you know, with a bit of...
Yes, unfortunately, us dirty, horrible human beings tend to actually have oily skin, and there's not an awful lot we can do about
it. No, that is true. Anyway, the similarities between the M3 MacBook Air and its predecessors are numerous, whether for good or bad, but Apple has announced there will be one key difference. The midnight colour variant for the laptop will not be a fingerprint magnet this time around. Apparently, there was also a scratch gate in 2022 because the M2 MacBook Air, the midnight blue version, was particularly vulnerable to fingerprints and scratching. New M3 version has a breakthrough anodization seal to reduce fingerprints. Similar to the Space Black M3 MacBook Pro, which was the first laptop to receive such a coat, which I believe means that although you can't feel it or see it, the surface of this anodization is not dead smooth, but actually dimpled all over.
Yeah, that would make sense, and then you wouldn't see it. I was just about to say, actually, what they ought to do is make a cover that is not removable and then say, I know you've got fingerprints, but that's on the cover. That's not on the machine itself.
So there you go. Apparently, it's got this new anodization, which helps reduce fingerprinting and so on. Wow. That's all very nice. Very nice, I'm sure. Then again,
we are all a little bit obsessive by having things that look pretty, aren't we? And keeping them looking pretty. It's a little bit like people who buy really expensive cars, and then the first thing they do is take them out and get them. What's the word? They're coated in like a sort of.
They have like
a hard shell that protects them.
Yeah, covered with what is it? It's like
I forget what it's called.
Yeah. I know the stuff. You can buy it yourself, can't you, and just put it on. It's a sort of...
You can, yes, yeah.
You can just, it's like a polish, and it's supposed to set a sort of thin, hard layer on the surface.
That's right, to protect your paintwork.
Protect your paintwork.
Oh, each to their own, I suppose.
Yep, indeed. So, there you go. All very nice, apparently. So, if you're thinking of getting an M3 MacBook Air, if you get 256... You will not be suffering a performance penalty in your SSD speed, and apparently you don't have to worry so much about fingerprinting. As I said to Nick, I've got my M2 MacBook Air is in a Massimo case. Not because I'm particularly worried about fingerprints, but because I paid a lot of money for it. There we are. I've had plenty of MacBooks in the past and never bothered to, but I must admit the midnight black is a bit of fingerprint mag.
I don't, obviously, having a Mac Mini, I don't bother putting a case on that. It just gets all dusty.
Oh, dear. There we are. This is not apparently at all. It's true. Mac has released Mac OS Sonoma 14.4, along with all the other 0.4s, which, of course, came out. And for what it's worth, there were a whopping 64 bug fixes in Sonoma 14.4, as well as the fact it added podcasting transcripts and a bunch of new emojis. But it is the array of security patches which makes this a mandatory update.
Jolly good.
64.
I don't think I've updated mine yet. I'm not quite sure what version I'm on. Have a look. Where is it? It's about, isn't it? About this Mac. 14.2.1. Oh, I'm a bit behind the times.
Ooh, 14.4 now.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'll be on 14.
Update when I get a chance.
I'll probably be on 14.4.1 within a fortnight.
Yes.
Because all the betas will come out. I'm not sure we're going to get a 14.5. Well, we've got until September. September. There could be a 14.5. Who knows? Whatever. I will know. I will find out. Time goes on. But there you are. And there are a lot of very serious security fixes in 14.4. So you really should update as soon as possible.
Yeah, right. Especially because you could get hacked.
Yes.
He says, segueing.
Yes.
Segueing.
Yes, good. Go on. Segue. Go on, because the news isn't that exciting, really.
Yeah, I've had the last couple of days, I've been all over the place, really, because I started to get messages from. So years ago, I did a bit of gaming. I've never been a big gamer, but I did a bit of gaming. So I've got a Steam account and I've got an EA account. And I started getting messages saying, you appear to be trying to log into this. And I thought, I'm not. Anyway, they managed to get into the account. They changed my email and deleted the telephone number. So I was a bit panicky then because I haven't used it for so long. I wasn't sure whether there was any payment methods in it. So I immediately tried contacting Steam, but Steam they're not easy to contact. They only respond to messages via their contact page, and that isn't easy to find. And there is a telephone number you can ring, but it says you may just get an automated message. And I thought, well, that's just as bad as not having one at all.
Thanks.
So anyway, the whole of yesterday I spent trying to get to the bottom of this. I managed. EA were much better. I got onto the EA website. I managed to get onto a chat with them, explain what was going on. They reset the password of it. At which point I put more security on it. I put two-factor authentication on it, and I went in and checked, and there wasn't any payment stuff in there, fortunately. So I then asked for them to delete the account altogether because I don't need it. I don't use it. So I asked them to delete it, and very quickly they did that. I then went back to Steam and kept badgering them and saying, come on, do something. I might be losing money here. I kept checking my bank account, as you do. But my bank account didn't go down any. So eventually Steam managed to recover the account, and I went in and I then requested that they delete it, and they said they'll lock it, but they'll keep it for 30 days. I prefer if they delete it, really, but that's apparently their policy.
That's their policy.
But unfortunately, their web servers are still trying to authenticate. So I'm just looking at my most recent emails, and I've got three from Steam support asking whether I want to recover my account. And I've got two from EA saying, this is your security code. So I'm guessing it's a machine, because there's an awful lot of them.
Yes,
there's a machine still trying to hack into my account. Fortunately, they're now protected. What's a little bit... This is a little bit concerning. I've also had three messages from Tinder and from Tinder in China.
Oh, nice.
Saying, you appear to be trying to set up an account. And no, I'm not.
Well, yeah, I would assume there that what they've recovered from your account, and this is why, you know, breaches, even the things that you think are trivial, can be
It's definitely from a breach.
They can... you know, they can get hold of your email address and possibly some other details, and from there they can attempt to open accounts.
Yeah, and if the email address is my Blue Yonder one, which of course I don't use any longer because I cancelled my Blue Yonder account, but the email address still exists, and I'm still getting forwarded emails from that account.
That's unusual.
Yeah, normally it said in their instructions it said they'd delete it after 90 days, but they haven't. So. I'm going to leave it for now, but it's disconcerting. At least, it's a little bit. I don't know whether any of our listeners have been burgled, but I have, and it's a very unpleasant feeling. And it feels a little bit like being burgled. So I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. Fortunately, everything they've got hold of so far is, and now, of course, I'm racking my brains about anything that I might have signed up for all those years ago. All the important stuff, all the current stuff is now moved across onto my Apple accounts. So I'm not worried about those. It's just anything I might have forgotten about, you know.
Indeed.
So, yeah, be careful, folks, particularly about old emails and old stuff you might have forgotten about, because the baddies haven't.
Yes. And unfortunately, this is also a problem because, you know, if it's from years ago, we were all a little bit more naive and a little less security conscious.
Yeah, I have a feeling I had a very simple password on it, one I used to use many, many years ago.
Exactly. And of course, you know, years ago, we quite often would do that on things which seemed innocuous.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, I was a bit panicky that there'd be payment details, but neither EA or Stream had actually got payment details because the stuff I bought was through PayPal and my PayPal's protected. So that I'm not worried about that.
Well, the other I was going to say, thankfully, if they're old accounts, which you haven't used in a long time, even if they did have a credit card, it would probably be expired.
Yes, that's true. Now. It's probably an old credit card as well, if there had been one. Yeah, but that's still, it's horrible. It's a nasty feeling to know that someone's digging about in your stuff.
Yeah, even if it is only your Steam account.
Yeah.
Not pleasant. So there you go. Remember, people, Apple will help you go through your passwords and check if you've got duplicates or weak passwords. And so things like LastPass, make use of them, make use of them. And also, of course, don't forget that you can use services like our friends at Simple Login to generate, you know, throwaway email addresses and aliases.
Yeah, that's true.
And of course,
I might consider using those now.
Well, there's that, and of course there's Apple's Hide My Email. If if you pay even 99p or whatever it is a month, you can use Hide My Email, where Apple will generate rubbish emails on the fly, and it will just keep on doing those for you and put them in a list. And if you start getting stuff that appears to be coming from one of those, you can just bin
it. What I don't know is how they managed to get into the Steam account, really, because I was getting the authentication messages. But they still managed to get in, so I'm not quite sure how that worked.
I could be, you know, if the Steam verification thing isn't as secure as they'd like. They could be brute forcing it, or
They recommended that I can't remember what it was now. There's something else that you can add that is a little bit like two-factor authentication, but is more secure still. Which I haven't. I can't remember what it was, what they said. Because I've deleted all the emails now. I just don't want to be bothered with it.
No.
But
closed them down. You weren't using
them. Yes, they're closed down, so there shouldn't be any problem from here on in. So
they're obviously still attempting to get in, so you're right. It's probably a bot.
Yes, of course, I expect so. Yeah.
It is possible that they could have, by redirecting your phone number, if they changed the phone number on the account, they could be attempting to get their own codes. But anyway,
Yes, I did check the telephone number when I got back in, and it was still set to my... they'd deleted it, not removed it. So, not replaced it, rather. I feel fairly safe now, but just a little uneasy.
Yes, I'm not surprised. It's never great. There we are.
So a cautionary tale for a Sunday evening.
Check your security. And if you've got old accounts that you don't use anymore, think about going in and actually getting rid
deleting
of them.
Yeah. I wish if I'd got a criticism, I'd say that companies need to make it simpler to delete them. Steam particularly was just backwards and forwards messages, and you're thinking all the while, what happens if they're spending my money? Can you please get on with it?
indeed.
Not all these companies are particularly good at, first of all, they're not very good at surfacing how to delete your account, and secondly, they're sometimes not very quick at actually doing it either. So
again, I might be misremembering this, but I'm pretty sure I've read somewhere that the EU are, again, that's something that they're looking to move on.
Oh, right, that would be good.
I believe that's something where they're going to mandate that, you know, if you can simply sign up online, or, you know, I mean, there's plenty of services where they're free and whatever, but they want your email address.
Yes.
And they want you to create an account, whether you really want to or not. I believe the EU are working on mandating that in those cases, it has to be just as easy to go in and delete your account as it is to create.
That sounds like a worthy thing to be working on.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere at some point. And I think that is the sort of thing they should be concentrating on.
Yes, indeed.
That, things like dark patterns, outlawing dark patterns and so on. There we are. Right. This one's a bit of a sort of rumour/speculation from Tech Radar. Apple could be planning a giant foldable MacBook which doubles as your iPad. A 20-inch MacBook is rumoured to be the only foldable Apple is planning. And I think it was Alistair in the Slack said, aren't all MacBooks foldable by default?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a Ming Chi Kuo rumor. The claim is that the latest info from sources is that Apple's only foldable device with concrete development plans is a 20.3-inch MacBook. Someone else says that it's actually a 20.25-inch foldable, which is splitting hairs. We mentioned the MacBook being a long way out. Quo believes it won't enter production until 2027. In this context, foldable means a laptop, which is one big screen which folds up. All notebooks are foldable, of course, but normally have a screen on one side and a keyboard deck in the other. So, and you can read about that if you want. Apparently, it sounds a bit like something like, what was it, the Lenovo Yoga or Origami or whatever it was called. I don't know. There were several of those at one point when they're sort of where you could fold the screen round on the back of the keyboard and use it as a tablet, or ones where they literally detached. But I'm not sure I'd put a huge amount of stock in this rumour, personally. But anything is possible. Apple do all sorts of things, so who knows? And I suppose, you know, Mr. Kuo is as reputable a kind of prognosticator as any, in that he gets half of it right. Oh, dear. There we are. What do you think about that, Nick? Do you think that even sounds like something Apple would want to do? Oh.
And there's a slight pause because I was just making a cup of tea. Oh.
So, that's all right, then.
Yes, yeah, I thought, oh no, he's asking me a question. yeah, I'm not sure. Does any of us want to actually type on a screen?
Not really.
That's the biggie against having two screens. That I just can't see that. We all like having a keyboard. I mean, with my MacBook Mini, Mac Mini. I use a Logitech, and it's just a tiny keyboard, about the same size as the Apple one, and it's a brilliant little thing. And it's one of these where the batteries are. I shouldn't say this, should I? Because it'll probably fail any second now. But it's still on its original batteries, you know.
Yeah.
And
keyboards don't use a lot, do they?
It's a great little keyboard, but would I want to be typing on a screen? It's a little bit like in cars these days. There is a tendency to put in touch surfaces in cars.
Yes, there is.
And all the tech, all the car bloggers and vloggers hate the touch surfaces. They just say, give us buttons. Give us real buttons. If you're trying to reach something while you're driving, you haven't got time to look down at your finger and make sure you're touching the right button.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing for computers, I think. I mean, you won't want to be typing on a screen, because there'll be, even if there's tactile feedback from, you know, Apple's
haptics, yeah.
Haptic stuff, I just can't see it myself.
No, I'm not.
So, I don't think that's true at all. I don't know where he's got that idea from, but that just, have Apple played with it? I expect they've played with almost anything,
yeah, everything.
But, can I see it happening?
The only way I could see this is that it's not really a foldable MacBook, but it's actually a giant,
honestly,
foldable,
if they would...
a giant foldable iPad, which is what we were talking about the other week.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's much more likely. But the fact that they wouldn't actually put a touch screen on a Mac sort of tells you something, really, doesn't it?
Yes.
they even went to the point where they put that little strip across the top. Just to say, look, you've got something to touch now. Now stop going on about it.
Stop it. Just stop it. What's that snippet that Gaz used to play sometimes? I've had enough of all this behaviour.
Yeah. So, no, definitely not a foldable giant MacBook.
No, I don't think so. Doesn't, you know. An iPad, possibly, but there we go.
Yeah, I could see that being. I could see there being some use in that.
Yeah, you know, but
even so, I'm not sure.
No, I'm not convinced. Interestingly, all right. Next of all, what should we have a look at? We've got one here from Variety. Yeah, strange, not really a tech thing, but of course, this is in fact Apple's blockbuster gamble was spending $700 million on Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, and Argyle. Worth it. Well, as it say, this is mostly, of course, Killers of the Flower Moon and Napoleon have 13 shots to take home an Oscar. They've spent apparently $700 million on Killers, Napoleon, and Argyle. I don't know anything about Argyle, I'll be honest. I'll follow this
no,
week.
No, nor me. You know, a slightly different subject, but related. I was watching a video yesterday by a commentator, just a YouTube commentator about media of this sort. And he was speculating that all the different companies we now have that stream video are going to end up going the same way as cable companies, which I mean, some of his argument was reasonably compelling. You know, the fact that you just can't get away from adverts these days, and that it feels and feels more and more like, not that I've ever had American cable television, I've had British cable television. He was speculating that we're going to have fewer of them, that some of them will fold or get bought out by the others. And I thought his argument was, you know, he said quite often people are spending more now than they were on cable.
Yes,
because they're subscribing to Netflix and Paramount and whatever.
Yes, and I think a lot of people kind of predicted this, because obviously when we first started, you know, streaming first kind of started to kick off, you'd got Netflix and you'd got Amazon Prime, and that was pretty much it. Yeah. And then they all started, you know, everybody wanted to get in it. I mean, Apple.
That's right. Then we got Disney Plus.
And, but the thing, Apple, slightly an oddball there in that they launched a service, but they were basically producing pretty much their own material or occasionally purchasing something for their stable. Yeah. Whereas when, you know, when Disney and Sony and all these other people started their own, and Max and what and whatever, and Paramount all started to launch their own, they were doing that by pulling their material from Netflix or Amazon or wherever.
Yes.
And all this stuff started to get siloed. And then you get into the situation, which we're in now, where there's, you know, a dozen different services. And then...
One of the other things he speculated was, at the moment, there's quite a lot of people who do what I do. They'll watch what they want to watch, and then they unsubscribe for a while. And then they come back again later, and he reckons that they'll do something to stop that, because that's not very good for their business. And he thinks that they might introduce like a reintroduction charge. Mm. And I thought, well, if they do, I won't be going back to them.
You know,
and that's the end of
that. That'll be the end of that. And you'll just go, well, stuff it.
Yeah, they'll lose even more customers that
so
way.
But I
thought it was an interesting comment.
And I tend to agree with that, because we all know that some of the smaller players are already struggling. I mean, I don't know, you know, there's people like Max and Paramount and Hulu and Plex.
That's right, there's loads and
loads,
loads of
and
them.
Loads of them. Yeah. Some, you know, I mean, Roku have their own one, which contains a load of stuff for free. I think Plex do one. Of course, those tend to hold mostly older material.
But, yes.
There you go. I believe I can see that happening, that gradually, like so many things, they will start to conglomerate again, because I don't think the market can sustain, you know, all these different services. It just can't.
No, I think you're right. But, having said that, Apple are, you know, they've got so much money to throw around.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that even if these things are a flop, that it would really hurt Apple significantly.
No.
But obviously they want everything they do to be a success.
Well,
so,
of course.
It remains to be seen whether they'll whether spending all, was it $21.5 million?
Apparently, Argyle is a spy thriller by Matthew Vaughan.
I'm reading the wrong bit. $21.5 million was Killers. What's that say? I'm reading the wrong bit. Apple spent at least $700 million to make and market just three films: Killers, Ridley Scott's Napoleon, and Matthew Vaughan's Argyle.
So,
yes.
There you go. Was it worth it? It depends. Value is a
value is in the eye
of the beholder, isn't it? And
well, Apple have never been in for the throw everything at it kind of brigade, have they? They've always said from the beginning they wanted to put quality stuff
out. Yes, quality first.
So spending quite a lot of money isn't strange to them, shall we say.
No. So there we are. All I can say about that really is I have not watched Killers of the Flower Moon yet because it's long, and I'm not saying it doesn't appeal to me, but I think I have to be in the right frame of mind to watch that.
Yes.
Napoleon, I was severely dissatisfied with at the end. I did not feel fulfilled when I reached the end of the movie. It wasn't a terrible movie. It's well made and it's well acted and all the rest. For me, I found it deeply unsatisfying at the end.
It
was a bit like...
Well, I still haven't got round to resubscribing yet, so I'm missing out on all this stuff.
I wouldn't, as I put in the Slack, I can neither recommend nor condemn this movie. It's
I think being a little bit meh is worse than being bad or good.
Well,
in some ways,
I mean, it might be personal to me. I wasn't exactly expecting
all opinions about things are personal. Our own, aren't they?
I wasn't expecting.
There are things that I'm sure that, I mean, we've talked a lot about stuff, and I'm not a great lover of crime thriller type things. It's not really my cup of tea.
No.
I think I've said before as well, that doesn't mean there aren't some crime sort of things that I quite like. So I liked watching Bones when that was on. And that was a sort of investigatory sort of... It's strange, isn't it? But we all have our own opinions about things, and that's what makes for a bit of richness in life.
Yeah, exactly. And for all it's worth, there's quite an amusing little picture in this Variety piece where they've got Napoleon in the Egyptian desert. You can see a bit of the pyramid in the background. And they've photoshopped it or AI generated it to show him wearing a black T-shirt, which says, "I nearly conquered Europe. All I got was this lousy T-shirt," as a riff on the usual one.
Very good.
There we go. Yeah. No.
I hadn't noticed that. I was looking at that picture for about 10 minutes and I didn't notice that.
I didn't hate Napoleon. It was at the end of it, I just felt unsatisfied by it. To my mind, there was a lot of... obviously, it's mostly about him and Josephine. I understand that. And I didn't expect a kind of a retelling of all of his campaigns. And there are battle scenes and whatnot, but there seem to be huge gaps. Just stuff happens, and then there's a big battle sequence, and then there's some political stuff, and he's talking. And the big chunks seem to be... A lot of the political machinations between the the major powers are just not entered into at all. So one minute he's trying to kill Frederick of Austria or wherever it is, and the next minute he's best buddies with him and wants to marry his sister. It's all a bit. And I didn't find it very illuminating, all told. There you go. That's my opinion of that. There we are.
Yeah, let us know in the Slack room if you've seen it and what you think.
Yeah, indeed. As I say, I could neither condemn nor think. Oh, and talking of other things which I can't condemn nor recommend, it's I'm still struggling on with Constellation, the sort of weird space/ghost story thing. I think I've figured out now what it's all about. It centers around... I'm pretty sure it centers around quantum mechanics, and I believe that what's going on in the various tales is that two versions of the same woman have effectively swapped universes, and they're very similar, but not quite the same. And different things have happened to them in their lives, which, anyway, I think that's the main thrust of it. Whether I think it will be worthwhile, I guess, depends on how it either wraps the story up or leaves it hanging for another series. It's getting more. I think I've got a handle on what I think they're doing. It's getting a bit easier to follow, and the three story threads seem to be separating out into separate strands, which might help. But anyway, there we are. So what we got? According to 9to5Mac, what's the most popular Mac in the US? Here's what a study says. Now, how accurate this study is open to debate. Apparently, in 2022, the CIRP data showed that Apple MacBooks were the primary driver of computer business, with the MacBook Air and Pro making up 75% of the computer's sales. Well, that's not surprising, is it? The mix of Apple's laptops versus desktops are skewed even heavier than ever towards portables in 2023, with 90% of US buyers picking a MacBook Air or Pro over iMac Mini, Studio or Pro. And they've got some charts.
I think just from my experience when I was working, I think it's much more likely that companies are going to buy laptops for their workers,
yes,
than desktops. Especially if you were working for a company like I was, where all their desktops were just dumb terminals, really, to the servers. In which case, obviously, you wouldn't be having a Mac. But I'm not surprised that it says 25% of the desktop models.
No, that doesn't surprise me at all.
That sounds about right.
But
75% are the portables.
Some of this data seems slightly dubious to me. I mean, they've got the MacBook Air in here at 39% of...
I'm always a bit wary about any data that doesn't state from the beginning how big the sample size was.
And the MacBook Pro is at 50...
having someone who's worked with data all my life,
and
that always makes me... I end up with a nervous twitch.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah. Like a chart. It's like a chart with nothing marked on the axes, and what's this supposed
yes,
to mean?
Yes, yeah, a little bit like that.
The MacBook Air they've got here at 39% and the MacBook Pro at 51%. I find that highly unlikely because Apple have frequently pointed out that the MacBook Air is their most popular laptop. They've said it lots.
And they have leapfrogged their MacBook Pros a few times, haven't they, with the Air.
I find that slightly dubious. The only reason I suppose this could be skewed is that the M3 Air has only just launched and the M3 MacBook Pros were out slightly earlier. That might skew the data.
Could be. Could be. I'd say it really depends on who their sample is and how big it was.
Exactly. And 9-to-5 Max take is exactly the same as yours. Hard to know how accurate this data is, as the firm did not share sample size for its study, and Apple doesn't reveal any metrics. So there you go. I just chucked that in there because several people have mentioned it. I think on The Verge they mentioned it, and one of the guys on there said, I trained as a statistician and all statistics are made up. So
yeah.
Most of statistics is
lies.
I'd say
if you don't state your sample size, they might have literally asked the guy in the next cubicle.
Yeah.
Which one do you prefer?
Yeah, precisely. Precisely. So there you go. A somewhat, dubious thing. The overall thing, desktops to laptops, does not surprise me, and I think people have been saying that for years, so I don't think there's...
I suppose the fact is they're only doing it because Apple have stopped saying it, haven't they? I don't think they split their stuff up anymore,
they don't give out sales figures or whatever, and haven't done for years now. They just stopped doing it. So there we are. What have we got? DMA related stuff again. Apple's last minute app store change comes with a catch. This is because Apple originally said that developers in the EU would be able to stay in the app store or take the new EU version of their offering, which offered them lower commission rates, but you have to pay the core technology fee if you go over 1 million installs and blah, blah, blah. Apparently, Apple, again, I suspect because of pressure from the EU behind the scenes, Apple have rolled this back and you can now try them out and then switch back to the original terms. Apple says it has created a one-time option to revert to Apple's original agreement in case of unexpected business changes or if developers change their minds. Developers can only switch back if they didn't put their apps in an alternative app store or use alternative payment options. So, it's not kind of, but it does allow you to try the the lower commission rates and so on, and then decide that they're not for you and go back. Whereas before, Apple said if you decided to take them, you were stuck with it, whether it turned out to be a terrible decision or not. And I would say that I suspect that the EU has leaned on them and said you can't do that because people don't know what the don't know what the consequences will be. So here we are.
I didn't realize SetApp was coming to the App Store. SetApp
have been the first company. SetApp belongs to Macpaw, a Ukrainian company, by the way. So good for them.
Yes.
They have said that they will be launching an App Store or alternative applications marketplace.
So presumably it'll just work like the SetApp app does.
I guess maybe they will sell a selection of stuff or subscriptions or whatever. They will be doing their own marketplace.
That's interesting.
They're the first people. Epic, of course, weren't going to. Now we'll be allowed to. I'm sure the Epic store will come. Again, that whole thing, unseemly. Apple should have just let Epic bring their store, and then they could have said to the EU, look, see, the people who hate us most, we've let them have their own store and let them get on with it. And they didn't, so silliness.
Yeah, they should have done. But
then they'd come off as the bigger, more adult.
They would have done.
But they didn't.
And I can't see that it would have affected their, considering the way that they've actually implemented it, it probably wouldn't have hardly affected their income at all.
No. Anyway, there we are. So that's one. Barring the caveats, you will be able to test out the EU rules by either staying in the App Store and trying the new terms or whatever, and come back if it doesn't work out. Also, alternative iOS app stores only work for a grace period when traveling. And this is, of course, because Apple are making sure that you can only make use of these if you actually are in Europe and you have to have your iCloud account has to be registered in Europe and your device has to be inside the European Union while you do it and blah, 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 blah. And basically, if you leave the European Union geographically, your European only stuff will continue to work for 30 days, I believe, before you have to go back to Europe to get them to work. Your apps will apparently continue to work, but will not be able to be updated. But when you return to Europe, of course, it'll all go back to normal for you. This, I think, was just a clarification. Says here, if you leave the European Union for short-term travel, you will continue to have access to alternative app marketplaces for a grace period. If you're gone for too long, you'll lose access to features, including installing new marketplaces. Apps you will installed from alternative app marketplaces will continue to function but can't be updated. It says here, we've contacted Apple for clarification of the grace period. I read somewhere else that Apple have said 30 days, but we shall see.
Mm-hmm. One of the comments below here says they make 90s Microsoft look like Care Bears.
Not sure that's true.
No, I don't think it's true either, but it's funny.
It's funny. It's definitely very funny. And also related to the DMA, Apple removes a big barrier for rival iPhone app stores. This is on Cult of Mac, and this is related to the fact that initially Apple said you had to have a standby letter of credit for €1 million to be able to open an app store marketplace, I should say. According to somebody I was listening to on a podcast who knows much more about this thing, a standby letter of credit is not the same as a line of credit. So you don't just have to be able to get a bank or somebody to say they will give you €1 million should you need it. You have to effectively pay €1 million to a bank for them to hold sort of on deposit on your behalf. And again, I suspect they've been lent on. The iPhone maker has bowed to pressure and updated the requirements. There is a second option. Instead of a letter of credit, the company which wishes to open a rival to the App Store can be a member of good standing in the Apple Developer Program for 2 continuous years or more and have an application which has more than 1 million first annual installs on iOS in the EU in the prior calendar year. You no longer have to effectively, you might be able to, I suspect there are still assurances required that you have enough cash to support it, but I suspect possibly a line of credit rather than a standby letter of credit maybe suffice. I thought the, I always thought the thing about this standby letter of credit, meaning that you actually have to deposit €1 million somewhere rather than just having, you know, your bank say, yeah, they're good for it. If Apple need the €1 million, we're happy to, you know, supply it. Somewhat overly restrictive, and I suspect the EU have probably said so too. So that's those. That's all the DMA stuff, I'll be honest. Thankfully. There's a bit here about Siri in 17.4 now lets Siri learn your default music service, whereas previously I believe it was restricted to Apple Music. Apple opened up the HomePod to third-party music services alongside the release of the HomePod Mini in 2020. While some like Pandora and Deezer jumped on board, others like YouTube took a bit longer. Meanwhile, despite being listed as a partner, Amazon Music remains missing in action for unknown reasons. Probably because they'd rather you used an Echo device for that, I suspect. And Spotify has stubbornly held customers hostage in its war with Apple. Nevertheless, one of the annoying limitations of the HomePod was that you had to either set the music service as a default in the Home app on your iPhone or suffix every request with on or using to call up tracks from that service instead of Apple Music. Ditto for podcasts, audiobooks, etc. However, it's not a deal-breaker, but it requires to jump through some hoops. Thankfully, it's bringing some of the same logic to smart speakers in HomePod, and you can now apparently say Siri will learn your preferred media apps for music, podcast, and audiobooks. So there you are. And follow-on story to this, because Spotify, a bit like Epic, keep whining and whining and whining that nasty Apple are unfair to them. 9to5 Mac say there's no excuse for failing to action Spotify HomePod's support. A complaint made by rival streaming services was that if you asked HomePod to play something, it would do it on Apple Music. There was no way to get it to play music from a rival service. The only way to pay Spotify through HomePod was to AirPlay from the app, which is clunky. Apple fixed this in 2020, allowing HomePod owners to specify a third-party music app as a default music player. iOS 17 has introduced another workaround, allowing HomePod owners to specify a music service as part of their request or tell a HomePod to play from Spotify. Why in 2024 does Spotify not support a feature Apple made possible in 2020? The only explanation is it is engaged in a feud with Apple and doesn't want to do anything to cooperate. In taking this stance, it's damaging its own attractiveness as a music service and frustrating HomePod-owning subscribers. And it annoys me on a daily basis. And personally, from what I've been reading this week, that's because Spotify want to be able to say, but Apple won't let us, which is not true. More childish behaviour all round.
Indeed.
Basically, in this one, I'm afraid I do agree with Apple. You know, Spotify want to have all the benefits and none of the drawbacks of being on Apple devices. So there you are. Take that as you will. Refusing to support the HomePods strikes me as nothing more than childish spite.
Yeah, I agree.
There we are. Not much to say about that. And we'll just wrap up now because we've been going for a while, Nick, and the time is ticking on. just to say that Apple are not the only ones. Google is following Apple's lead by adding new developer fees in the EU. This is from Engadget. You can go and read it if you like. Basically, in the same way, no doubt, because of exactly the same rules, Google are offering people in the Play Store the option to use their own payment methods and whatnot, but they still want cut. So there you go. No surprise there. You can go and read about that on Engadget if you care. I don't care because I'm not an Android user, but and I'm no doubt there'll be the same shenanigans going on there about big bad Google want to have their pound of flesh even though we're not using their services. And then we have Android Central with a headline, "Why the hell would Google promise 7 years of updates?" And this is because Google have announced that their latest Pixel phone, which is what, Pixel 8? Don't know. Yes, Pixel 8. It would offer 7 years of software updates. And then they talk about that. I'll be honest. As I said to Nick before the show, I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that the EU are moving in direction of mandating a minimum period in which, you know, suppliers must support handsets, tablets, so that they can no longer be, you know, rendered obsolete in 2 years because no more updates are available. And also, I think Google just want to be able to say we do as good or better than Apple, because Apple promised to support their handsets for 5 years and it, at minimum, and it usually drags out to 6 or 7 unless some major change in technology occurs. So that's it. That's all I have to say on that.
I think you're probably right.
I suspect they're doing it because it's quite likely the EU will force them to anyway, and they want to be able to say, well, look, we already do it. You don't need to force it on us. We're already doing it, EU. Just like Apple, we're all doing it. Of course, that only applies to the Pixel, because that's Google. It doesn't apply to anybody else, but there we are. That's why, I think, is the answer to that headline. I've got a couple of worth of chirps, which are, "This simple trick helps stop your iPhone apps from tracking you." This is from a site called Living Etc. It's basically a reminder of how to go into preferences and manage app permissions for individual apps, and how to use the whatever is it called, the kind of universal "don't track me," don't allow apps to track me. But though, nothing I doubt people listening to this show don't know, but it's always good to have a reminder.
Indeed.
And we have one here which is interesting. "I review laptops for a living, and this is the MacBook I now recommend." This is on Tom's Guide. And the long and the short of this is, being a laptop reviewer means I recommend the best laptops I know of to Tom's Guide readers and people I meet every day. And basically, his current recommendation, unless you absolutely must have the latest, greatest and flashiest, is MacBook Air M2, because it is now dropped to the bottom of the line and sells from $999. And I have to say, I don't think there's a problem with that. I think that's a very good recommendation, unless you need the latest and greatest. An M2 MacBook Air is probably the best value laptop you can lay your hands on. I think you'd probably agree with that, wouldn't you, Nick?
I would indeed.
Yep.
Sounds very sensible.
I think that's, you know, nice to see a reviewer who understands not everybody wants to throw 3,000 quid at a MacBook Pro. Or even a new, you know, even the latest MacBook Air. We've got a bit of a story here, which actually I don't have a link to because it was all in the Slack, people. All in the Slack. But Donnie Yankolo, who's, you know, friend of the show and member of the Slack room, who is a teacher and therefore buys stuff for education for his pupils, apparently ordered some new Zag pencils for use in the classroom, and rather than, you know, Apple pencils, and was sorely disappointed. Obviously,
yes, he was.
Yeah, and disappointed is a bit of a pun, because apparently some of the tips wore out within the day. At least one of them cracked and split. And effectively, Donnie was displeased with the quality of the product and was sorely surprised, because he believed that Zag, you know, are well known for quality products. He also was a bit displeased with Zag's customer support, where when he told them that he was an education purchaser and he purchased a, you know, job lot of these pencils for his classroom, and that they, you know, failed to survive the day, they said, give us your order number. And when they found out he'd purchased them via Amazon, told him to talk to Amazon about it. So
nothing to do with us.
Go and talk to Amazon about it. But, you'd have thought they might have been a bit concerned that their product apparently didn't make it through one day.
Yeah.
And as Donnie said, I thought Zag were a reputable company who make you know, quality products. I shall be returning these to Amazon and purchasing a load of who makes the crayon? Belkin, is it Belkin who make the crayon? Anyway, he'll be purchasing a load of crayons. And we don't mean the wax kind, the ones. Some iPad crayons, which I think are Belkin off the top of my head. But anyway, they're from a well-known supplier and have a very good reputation. And Mac Jim had one. And even though I think he sold it after a while because he found he wasn't using it, said that he did enjoy using it and it was a nice product. So there we are.
Jolly good. It's never been something that's really appealed to me, writing on my iPad in that way.
No.
Perhaps, I mean, I'm not in the slightest bit artistic.
I think
I find using my fingers is easier.
I think Mac Jim bought his for filling in like PDF forms that he gets from his work.
Ah, right, okay. I can see that. Yeah. Yes, I can see that being useful. Sort
of timesheets and things, and he thought that would be easier than typing on the touch, you know, on the iPad.
Fair point.
Anyway, there we are. And last of all, the Justice Snippets. This one, I haven't even read this, but at the last minute I saw it and I thought it would be amusing. A metal detectorist has recovered 200 Apple Watches from Illinois lakes. This was on 9to5. And a professional metal detectorist. I'm glad to see they used the correct term there. Very important.
Oh, yes.
Yes, very important. Go watch The Detectorists if you haven't. You'll understand. Derek Langos says Apple Watches have become a surprisingly big part of his business. According to him, he's recovered more than 200 Apple Watches while diving, while searching the Chano Lakes region in Northeast Illinois. He has found a variety of items over the years, ranging from Apple Watches to iPhones to gold rings, prescription glasses, and more. Apple Watches, however, are among the most common finds, and nearly all had the original watch band still attached. And there's a photograph here of a whole load of them.
There is a lot.
As you can see in the image below, the watch band style in question is Apple's Sport Band. The ones with the sport bands, they do not stay on in the water, he said.
Oh, I see. So people are losing them because they fall
apparently,
off.
Apparently, the sport band is not good in the water. And it, like, maybe it lubricates the little, you know, pop a bit and allows it to come undone.
Yeah, maybe. Interesting.
He says he added the majority of the Apple Watches he finds will still take a charge, but they are oftentimes difficult to actually return to their owners. Most still take a charge, but because they are locked, it's difficult to get them back to the owner. He can send a call this number message to the watch that forwards to a cell phone, then he has been able to return it. However, cell phone companies have mostly shown disinterest in getting the device back to their owners. There you go. The full report is over at the Shore Local News and a pretty interesting read. I didn't realise how big this type of business can be until I read this story. So, there you go. Interesting little sort of just a snippet there. So if you're going to go swimming in the lake, don't wear your Apple Watch, or apparently, you know, use one with a buckle or other fastening than the sport strap. Because apparently it has a tendency to fall off in the water, at least according to his experience. And the other, just a snippet, I forget who posted this. I think it might have been Donnie again. This one he posted rather sarcastically. Colorware delivers a retro makeover with limited edition Apple number 2 pencil. And this is Colorware, who I believe allow you to do various other color, various other items for a fee. Like your AirPods, you can have yellow or purple.
Oh, I see.
They do.
So they've just basically made it look like a proper pencil.
Yes. And anyway, yes, this makes it look like your traditional American number 2, which is basically a yellow pencil with a pink eraser on the tip. Here in the UK, we would probably be more familiar with the Staedtler HB, but that's the
indeed
similar kind of thing, the one that we all get at school. And the number 2 pencil is, I believe, sort of the one that all Americans think of as a standard pencil. So Colorware will turn your Apple pencil into an Apple number 2 pencil, so it's got a yellow barrel, faux sharpening effect around the tip, and you know, the actual nib is black, and they colored the cap at the top so it looks like an actual eraser and so on. It's a second generation pencil, as it says here, do not sharpen.
Yes,
available in matte or gloss finish, only available for a limited period, Colorware warranty. However, here's the teeth sucking part. To have your pencil turned this way will cost you $215, which is $86 upcharge. Currently, it's on sale for $79 upcharge at Amazon, putting this limited edition model at $136 premium. So, if you really, really want it, you can have it for a limited time, but it's not cheap. I think Donnie's comment was you can go on Amazon and buy clip-on covers, which do the same thing, for a few pennies. A clip-on case that snaps over the outside of your pencil to achieve a similar effect. Amusing, nonetheless, if somewhat. Although Colorware stuff has never been cheap, I'll be honest.
I don't think I've come across them before.
I forget what they charge to do AirPods, but you can have your AirPods made black or red or whatever. And they use some clever kind of technique. They're not just painted. This is the thing. They do some chemical thing that bonds to the plastic and so on. They're not just painted. Mm-hmm. They're not cheap. I seem to remember looking at the price of them for having your AirPods made a different colour and thought, wow, really? Are you having a bit of a laugh? But there are always plenty of people with plenty of money, and they're not.
Well, that's true.
You know, there we are. So that will do us, Nick. That will do us for this week, because we have reached the end of the stories, and I think you and I are probably both gasping for a cup of tea, and I'm sure Vinny is probably gasping for a wee. So there we are.
Good for him.
Yes. So, well, bad for him, I suppose. But anyway,
before
we go, I'll just mention the Mission to Seafarers appeal again. Look in the show notes for information. If you want to hear Reverend Canon Andrew Dotchin telling us all about it, look up the Wizard of Woke episode. But basically, he's looking for donations of old but working smartphones and internet-capable tablets to allow seafarers far from home to be able to talk to their friends and family. And if you're in the UK, you can contact him. As I said, in the show notes, you can find links. And he would be very, very grateful. And if you're overseas and feel like you'd like to make a similar donation, you know, contact your nearest Mission to Seafarers centre, which will be at, you know, major seaports, or you can go to the Mission to Seafarers website and, you know, just send them a few quid. But there we go. And that is it. So we'll wrap it up as usual. Join the Slack room. Join the Slack room, where you can join in with me and Nick and Donnie and Alistair and all the rest of us, where all sorts of fun tomfoolery goes on. And if you join, of course, you can look at my silly AI images. There we go.
That's right. As well as some in-depth discussion sometimes.
Oh, yes, yes.
Some of the posts get quite long.
Yes, yes, they do. They're quite, you know, often in-depth discussions of EVs or, you know, sometimes more technical things about photography and such like. It's not all, you know, it's not all silliness and hijinks. Not all a string of japes, but there we go. Other things go, all sorts of things go on there. If you're interested, you can still find me on the, you know, X Twitter as at Serenak, S-E-R-E-N-A-K. And with that, Nick and I will say goodbye for this week. So, goodbye.
Bye. Bye. Sorry, I went a little bit quiet at one point. I was resetting my password on Top Cashback, which had just popped up on my phone.
Oh, right.
So I've now deleted that account as well because I don't use it.
I don't use that either.
In some ways, they're doing me a favour. I'm getting rid of all the old stuff that I don't use
anymore.
Yeah,
exactly. Get rid of all the old clag. Yeah, well, that's also something worth doing from time to time, going through and thinking, do I actually use that? Do I want that?
It's remembering what you've signed up to, because, I mean, if you're like me, you just...
Oh, yeah, just, don't you just...
You're just interested in something, and then you're away, you know.
I've got a load of stuff, and mostly, of course, they keep emailing me, but I've got accounts with things which like which were from work, for work, the things like deposit photos.
Yeah.
And I signed up because, like, you know, they give away photos. A couple of times a week, they'll give you a free stock photo you can download, and I used to just do that. Font companies, clip art galleries, things like that. And I get all those, you know, download the free clip art of the week. Well, thanks, I've got enough clip art now. Now I'm not working, you know, now I'm not doing it professionally. I don't think I need to keep hoarding it all up. So. Right, no. I'll let you go, Nick, because
right,
I think the dog's not the only one who needs a wee.
Right, you all right. Have a good week.
See you next week, mate.
Bye. Thank you for listening to us here on the Essential Map Podcast. We appreciate your time. If you'd like to make a small donation towards the cost of our show, please feel free to visit our Patreon or our Pinecast tips jar. You can find the links in the show notes. And if you've already contributed or do already contribute, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much. This show is part of the MyMac Podcasting Network, where you can follow such excellent shows as Tim and David of Geeks Hub and also the Tech Fan Podcast. You can find Elisa and Melissa with their most excellent, geekiest show ever. And of course, you can find Guy and Gaz with the MyMac Podcast itself. So why not head over to mymac.com and check out some of the other shows on the MyMac Podcast.
Hi, my name is Dave Ginsberg, and I am the host of the In Touch with iOS podcast. We talk about all things Apple, including iPhone, iPad, Apple Watch, Apple TV, the news of the day, and related technologies. I am joined by many great guests from the Apple community, including Jeff Gamet, Guy Searle, Kelly Gumott, Chuck Joyner, and many others. Please give us a listen. You can find us in your favorite podcatcher or intouchwithiOS.com.
You have been listening to the Essential Apple Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time.
So not only is today Mothering Sunday, but it's also my wife's birthday.
Right.
And yesterday she said to me, oh, perhaps we should go out for Sunday lunch as it's my birthday and you don't have to take Joe drumming, because obviously his drumming lessons are every other week on a Sunday lunch.
Right, yeah.
And I said, you're having a laugh, aren't you? She says, why? Why not? Because it's Mothering Sunday tomorrow as well as your birthday.
Yeah, you won't get in.
Everywhere will have been booked up weeks ago. You haven't got a hope in hell. But, oh, bugger, I hadn't thought of that. So we shall, we'll fit
it in another time.
Well, I might go out in the week. Yeah. There's a couple of reasonably pleasant places around here that do carveries all week, not just on a Sunday. So,
yeah, jolly good. That sounds nice.
There's quite a nice one on the outskirts of Ipswich. It's not situated anywhere very pleasant. It's sort of off the car park for a big Audi.
Oh, right.
on the edge of a large housing estate.
Yeah.
But it's called Chestnut Tree Farm. I mean, it's one of these big chain type things. I don't know what group it's part of. But they do a really nice carvery there. And they do it all the time. It's like all week. So,
yeah. That sounds very good. Can't beat a good carvery.
And they usually have three different meats available and then all the veg and everything. Quite a pleasant pub, though. So
jolly
good. There you go. Maybe we'll go there in the week.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. I've just booked myself a few days away in Somerset.
Mm.
Just on a whim. I just thought I wanted to go. I was thinking of going sometime in April, but I've got individual things I really need to be here for. A lot to do with church. So I've given up on April because it just got too complicated. Mm. I don't really want to go away for a whole week anyway, just a few days. So I'm ending up going away for a few days in May instead, from a Tuesday to a Saturday. So sounds nice, the place. It's a mill, an old converted mill that's been converted into a hotel. So it sounds,
that sounds good.
Sounds very pleasant. It seems to get quite good reviews on booking.com. Oh, and it's not ridiculously expensive, and it includes
always
breakfast.
Nice. Yep, well, that's always so, good, isn't it? Always good.
Well, you can get away with not eating much else if you have a really good breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm always a big fan when we go away because I don't have a lot of money to throw about. We usually go to Premier Inn, because you get a fabulous breakfast there, and they do.
That is true. Yeah, I went to a Premier Inn not long ago, and it was pretty good.
Also, they do, if you can get a meal deal, you buy the meal deal, you get, I forget how much it is, it's about £20 a head or something.
Mm-hmm.
But you get, that means you get breakfast and you get an evening meal. And the evening meal, you can have any two of the three courses, or you pay a £5 or something if you want the third course.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And you get a free drink chucked in, so a glass of wine or, you know, pint of beer.
Yeah. No, that sounds good.
And when we first used to go, the meal deal used to be, there was a restricted menu for the meal deal, which was extensive enough that if you were only staying like two nights, you weren't going to be struggling. But then the last time we went, said, we were on the meal deal, what's the menu? And they went, we've done away with that now, it's just anything you like. Anything that's not marked as large plate extra or something. And they said, they're all marked on the thing. They say, if it says supplement on it, you have to pay the supplement if you want it on the meal deal.
Yes.
So they're like the ones if you want something stupid like the 24-ounce steak or the, you know.
Yes.
I'll have the mega mixed grill, which is like enough food for a family for four, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Those sort of things.
Steaks are just crazy prices these days, aren't they?
Can be.
I went and got something to, was it last week or the week before? I needed to charge the car, and this was before I got my charger repaired. Well, the electrics repaired. And we got a Miller and Carter in just inside Sutton Park, and it's got a charging stations and car park next to it. So I went and parked the car up and set it charging and went in, and I had a meal, but I had a look at their steak prices, and they're £35 for a steak, and you think, oh, good grief.
Oh, really? Ow.
Yeah.
I mean, I know some of the better pubs around here, the steak, a decent steak will set you back £25, but blimey, even that's making me wince.
Even that's pushing it a bit, yes. That's right. So I haven't had a steak out for years because they're just too expensive. I suppose if it was a very special occasion, I might treat myself.
But, yeah, to be honest, if I want a steak out, you know, if me and Jackie say, let's go out and have a steak, we tend to go to the Hungry Horse because they're cheap there.
Fair enough.
You can get a steak with the usual. For some reason, they've stopped doing mushrooms. I don't know if there's a shortage of mushrooms or something, but anyway.
Oh, right. I do like mushrooms with the steak.
Yeah, you never get mushrooms with your steak anymore, but anyway. but they do one, I think they're about £9. I mean, rump steak's about £9, I think.
Yeah,
and
that's
also,
not too bad.
I mean, the Hungry Horse have these deals, don't they? They have the sort of, I forget what they are, it's like, you know, Curry Tuesdays and...
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean, and like Pie Wednesday and things
like
that.
Yeah, and things like that. And they do, I can't remember what day it is, but they do have a steak day. I forget what it is, buy one, get one half price or whatever the deal is at the time. But that's also a good way to go.
Mm-hmm.
You just want a steak, you know. I mean, their food's not terrible. Not, you know, not going to win any Michelin stars, but if you just want a steak and chips or steak and jacket potato, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, sometimes it's worth going. I mean, I popped out this week because what with all sorts of things going on this week, really, but I decided that I'd go out Thursday and get something. But we've got a little farm shop not far from me. Well, I say not far. It's probably about 4 miles, 3 miles, 3.5 miles. Their food isn't exceptional, but they do beautiful quiches. And I do like a nice quiche. And they serve them hot. And you don't get an individual quiche. You just get a really big slice.
Slice out of a proper quiche, yeah.
Yeah. And this week they did, it was peppers and spinach and mushroom quiche.
Oh, that sounds
awesome. And I love that combination. It's really nice. And they serve it with a few thin chips, you know, almost like fries. Not quite fries, but, you know, and a bit of salad. Oh, I just love it.
Yeah, nice.
It's not ridiculously expensive. And so I go there whenever I feel like just popping out for a bit of something. I think, oh, a bit of quiche.
I must admit, I do like a nice quiche, but I always find it better if you get a slice.
Oh, it is, yeah. And individual quiches just seem to be all pastry.
Oh, well, that's exactly what I was going to say. But if you have a small one, you get all that pastry and like, oh, no, thank you. I'd like a proper, you know. My dad stopped ordering pies at pub lunches and whatnot because he always thinks he's going to get a slice of pie.
and he ends up getting an individual, which is never quite the same, is it?
Well, even worse than that, a lot of places at one point had this thing of bringing you effectively a casserole in a little mini dish with a puff pastry topper on, which isn't to me.
No, it's not the same.
That's not a pie. That's, you know, my dad would always say, this isn't a pie. This is a casserole with a puff pastry on the top of it. So
he's right. He's absolutely right.
He is right. And I have to admit, actually saying that, one of the best places I've had a pie again was in the Hungry Horse. They do a really nice pie there, and it comes as a proper pie.
Oh, that's good.
You know,
when we first moved into Warmley, so Warmley is like a little suburb to Sutton Coldfield. And when we first moved here, there was still a butcher in what I'll laughingly call the village. I mean, it's just so busy now with traffic. It's not like a village at all. But when we moved in, it was 1997, I think we moved. No, 93. It was 1993 when we moved here. So just over 20 years ago. Gosh.
Yeah, doesn't the time go by?
Do I mean 20? No, I mean 30, don't I?
Yes.
There was a butcher's in the village, and it's now a barber shop, I think. But it was originally a butcher's, and they did some nice meat cuts, but they also had like a deli counter, and they had some local made pies. Oh, gosh, they were to die for. They were like a steak pie, which is sort of mostly steak and very little pie.
Yeah.
It was. They were beautiful. So quite often on a Saturday, me and Mum would pop in and get us a pie to have for our lunch.
Get a pie. There you go.
Happy days.
Indeed.